Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
We dream the same dream, we want the same thing, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the first episode of On the Continent, a new European football podcast brought to you by The Football Ramble. Each week we'll be taking an in-depth look at European football's biggest stories. My name's Marcus Speller, some of you may know me, and my old mate Luke Moore's with me.
Yeah, all right, Marcus. I was thinking to myself, what one thing do I need more of in my life? And I thought, talking football with you twice a week just isn't enough for me.
No.
So let's go for the hat trick.
Yeah, that's right. But we need some pundit heavyweights with us.
We do.
To validate what we're doing here. and they, of course, come in the form of Television's Andy Brassel and Television's James Horncastle.
Say hello.
G'day.
I'm afraid I can't validate what you're doing. I think I might have to leave now.
Yeah. Well, you've already signed the contract, Andy. Yeah. So get your lawyers in on that one. But yeah, it's football has been happening in Europe. It's been quite an eventful time on and off the pitch. I think we can agree, gentlemen. And we're going to go through the big stories, of course, right now, as we're going to do every Wednesday. It's such an obvious place to start, so we've got to do it, Luke. Neymar.
Yeah, we should start with Neymar and the exploding bomb that is Barcelona. I read today that a couple of newspapers reported today, and these are the quotes they use, that the Barcelona dressing room is entering into a cold war with the boardroom, which cannot be a good thing. And I think that stems from Messi being photographed with Neymar on the same day they announced that the club are suing Neymar over a loyalty bonus for £7.8 million, I think.
And do we think that Messi or Messi's people maybe put this brief out that Manchester City would be willing to pay a buyout clause in that contract, just to ratchet up the kind of pressure. On that board?
So am I right in saying that that Messi still has a contract there for him unsigned, and Bartomeu has at one point, I think, started to intimate that he'd actually signed it when he hadn't, and that Messi would be free to move on to choose another club from January. Is that correct?
Well, they've just made a complete mess of it. I have to say, it's difficult to narrow it down because Barcelona's board have made a mess of a lot of things in recent years.
Good that Neymar pointed that out.
Yeah.
Well, like signing him, which led that president to go to jail.
Yeah. But, I mean, it is significant that Neymar said that because he's the most high-profile figure to have said that out loud. Everyone knows it, of course, but for someone like that to say it, and yes, you can say he's covering himself because he doesn't want to be accused of being greedy. But I think if we go backwards to the very start of the Neymar transfer, people always said it's because he wanted to be out on his own and win the Ballon d'Or, and it's about the money. It's about those things, sure, but I think it's also about leaving a sinking ship, and I don't think anyone really took a nod to that in the first place.
You go that far to say Barcelona's a sinking ship?
Well, they're a mess. I mean, you know, you can't write anything or say anything about Barcelona on Twitter without loads of Barcelona fans hitting you saying, this has been the same for months and months.
Wait
and
till
months.
This podcast drops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. saying that, you know, the board's a mess and, you know, we don't trust them to get anything right in terms of signings.
The thing is...
But Messi not getting into the last year of his deal is definitely the worst of all of them.
The thing is, the MSN, by putting that incredible, unprecedented strike force together, they kind of created a monster at Barcelona, because what happened when Xavi declined and went to play in Qatar, Iniesta, still a great player, but in the twilight of his career, they now just bypass the midfield and play to those three guys.
Mm.
And those three guys are more often than not enough on their own to win games for them. But they don't have the same control that they've had in previous years.
It's not just control on the pitch, though. It's control off the pitch. It's like if you go back to the first Florentino Perez era at Real Madrid, the first Galactico era, that idea of Zidane y Pavones. Mm. Like to have Zidane, to be able to afford Zidane and Figo and Beckham, you've got to have Paco Pavón in the team as well.
Yeah.
So, but what I'm saying it makes a difference, isn't it? They've not been able to strengthen in the ways that they've wanted to, certainly in terms of depth, if you look at the depth of them next to Real Madrid. So this day has been coming for a long time, and this decline of the team is something they've brought about, as I think you're saying, by creating that front three, because it's unsustainable to have the strength.
Let's talk about Barcelona, though. You're saying a sinking ship. Surely if they sink a little bit, they're still way above most other people. And look, you know, do you think PSG, you look at PSG, do you think, yeah, they're the club to be at? Because they still play in a slightly poorer league than the league.
Well, I differ slightly from what a lot of people have said about Neymar moving to PSG. And some people have said, you know, it's a shame he's going to be going away and playing against teams in Liga that aren't that good. But from Neymar's point of view, I mean, the money thing that Andy's mentioned, I agree with him. And you can take that as red, really, because all players are paid very, very well anyway. But he has a chance there to deliver a Champions League to a new club in terms of the size they are now. I mean, Andy, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm fairly sure PSG historically aren't a big club in France.
They're in their 40s.
Mm. Yeah, quite. So the idea of Neymar delivering the first Champions League to PSG, to Paris and all the rest of it, I think is quite a seductive idea.
Mm-hmm.
But just to go back to what you guys were saying about Barcelona on the pitch, off the pitch, with the news that this loyalty bonus is now being sued for, are we right to interpret that as this is Barcelona being essentially quite petty and trying to get whatever they can to save face in the public eye out of this deal because they're so put out by the fact that Neymar's basically sold them up the river and gone where they never thought he would go?
I think there's definitely an element of truth to that. I find the idea that you pay a loyalty bonus to a player's father, agent, whoever it may be, for basically respecting 1 year of a new contract to be something that is kind of wrong with the game.
I'm glad you mentioned Neymar's old man, because we've taken a little bit of a time to get there, but he does need a mention.
Yeah, he's made a lot of money out of his son, I think. It's quite remarkable. But I think Barca at the moment, as we've said, don't seem to have any kind of contingency planning whatsoever. I think Gabriele Marcotti pointed this out in his column this week, that if you look at, for example, the buyout clauses put in place by Real Madrid in their players, they are exorbitant. You know, they are 600 to 800 million euros. You know, completely.
It's not achievable.
Not achievable even for a state like Qatar.
Mm.
Whereas Barca, everything there is now seems to be, I can have a go.
Doable,
at that.
Doable, yeah, doable. Yeah. Like they've been left behind by the modern economics of teams like that, backed by big wealthy players.
But I think generally, Barca, and this goes back to the time that Pep was at the club, their recruitment has, Suarez and Neymar aside, been generally very poor. And I think you could even say this about Man City, since Chiqui Begiristain went there as well. Their big money signings, on the whole, have not paid off. You look beyond, and given that La Masia is not producing, or they're not putting the same trust in it that they did, there is not a great deal amount there. And also, I think we should also point out that one of the biggest losses at Barca, who also had a pop at the president and the board before Neymar, this is a year ago, is Dani Alves.
Mm.
Alves again showed in the Champions League last year that he is not only one of the best right backs in the world, but one of the best players, full stop. Nobody can do what he can do. And so I think, yeah, they've lost two signature pieces of their whole edifice, if you like.
Well, the Danny Alves point, I think, is a good one, because they went through all of last season not replacing him.
Mm.
So if you're a Barcelona fan, and we talked about it before, why would you have faith in them correctly replacing Neymar?
What do you think about the comments from Laporta, the ex-president, who I mean, I read it as him being quite mischievous, where he was saying if Bartomeu stays, he thinks Messi might leave.
Well, you can't rule it out because of everything that's happened in between. I still expect Messi to stay. I think the bigger concern at this point, and I know the concern of a lot of Barcelona fans, is that look at Messi's age now.
Mm.
You know, don't you get that feeling of a clock ticking? Don't you get that feeling of them wasting? of them wasting his last good years? Realistically, how many years of actual prime Messi have we got left? Three?
Mm.
Four? And can you see Barcelona really getting it together and, you know, becoming the best club team in the world again in that time? Well, not under this leadership, that's clear.
And you also would maybe struggle to see Messi perhaps reinvented himself as, say, like a number nine, like Cristiano Ronaldo.
I was going to say that, yeah. Can he adjust his game?
You know what?
Has?
Neymar and people talk about the evolution of Cristiano Ronaldo's game, and it's a really obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been an evolution in
James
Messi's.
Milner. Oh, sorry.
There's been an evolution in Messi's game, hasn't there?
Since
Suarez and Neymar arrived. But people talk about, you know, Barcelona being able to be a bit more direct, but also they did, a lot of the running for Messi. Now Suarez is still there, but you can't just stick in Gerard Deulofeu. I mean, obviously they're making moves. Very incompetent making moves to replace Neymar, but it's clear that there needs to be.
They're trying to replace Neymar.
Someone.
The way they're trying to replace Neymar is like a really bad cat burglar marauding his way through a house, knocking like pans over, scaring the dog. It's like being really obvious with everything they do, and before you know it, you wake up in the morning, you've got Paulinho for £40 million.
He's not earned that title, cat. He's just a burglar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I wanted to just to bring it back to Neymar, James. I wanted to chuck something your way about this. The ramifications, what we think the knock-on effect around European football is going to be from the fact that Neymar has moved to PSG, and there's talk now that Mbappe may in fact follow him as well. What do you think the knock-on effect around European football is going to be in the last couple of weeks of the transfer window?
I think it's inflationary, particularly for Barcelona, because everybody knows that they've got all this money burning a hole in their pockets. I think also it's really interesting to see what Barcelona are doing, because there isn't a player like Neymar out there on the market. He's a unique talent. He was the youngest member of the MSN, the one that they could point to the player with the biggest future towards. If anything, they were probably maybe looking to about how they might replace Suarez before they were going to think about what has obviously transpired with Neymar. I think it might also change people's approach to these buyout clauses as well, because Juventus, for example, after the Neymar transfer, there was a lot of talk about Paulo Dybala being on Barcelona's wish list to replace him. But Juventus just don't believe in buyout clauses. They think, why would you set a limit on someone's value? And I think that's a really fair point.
But we have to say it's legal in Spain and Portugal. You legally have to have it. Well, but I think the Portuguese kind of led the way in that sense, didn't they? I mean, you see a lot of things in the papers, like for the last 5 or 6 years, I guess, since Premier League clubs have regularly bought from Portugal, saying 100 million rated Hulk.
Yeah.
And it was never that. It's just his buyout clause is that. And the buyout clause is saying, go away, we don't want to sell to you. And that's what it should do. And as you say, James, that's what Barcelona have failed to do, failed to put them at the appropriate levels.
But it's not enough of a deterrent anymore, unless you do what Real Madrid have done. I mean, for example, you look at some of the biggest clubs around Europe outside of Spain, they are just exploiting the fact that some clubs put in buyout clauses. And to an extent, they're pressured to do so by the players and their entourages.
Mm.
But you see Juventus get Higuain, Pjanic, again, players who when they put those buyout clauses in place, they thought, no one's gonna exercise those buyout clauses, and instead, you know, you sell Paul Pogba for a world record transfer fee, and all of a sudden, those buyout clauses look cheap.
Absolutely right, Andy. Also with Barcelona, a huge kick in the teeth for them at the moment is the fact that Real Madrid look unbeatable. They look absolutely magnificent, and won again on the weekend, scoring a goal with a 44 pass move, finished off by Casemiro, which isn't too bad.
It's only against Deportivo La Coruña, steady.
A win's a win's a win.
Yeah.
let's not forget the two Champions League trophies back to back either. But Do you think, this is maybe going to sound slightly ridiculous, do you think that they're sort of, dare I even suggest, slightly underrated for what they are, Real Madrid, in terms of when Pep Guardiola's Barcelona were playing tiki-taka and all the rest of it, people talked about them as one of the best sides ever.
Mm.
With this Real Madrid side, people are saying, oh yeah, they're absolutely brilliant. Do you think that they've earned the right to be talked about in those kind of terms?
I'm not convinced that's the case just yet, but we've got to start thinking about them in that direction because, as you say, they've done what no other team has done in the Champions League era and retained the title. And I think you have to look at the future of the team as well and what Zidane's done in terms of creating a genuine meritocracy there, which I think no one ever imagined would happen at Real Madrid. That's the incredible thing. Mm. As you say, Marcus, people are having to readjust their view of Real Madrid because no one thought Zidane was going to be a good coach. No one thought he was going to last.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't their first choice. No one thought he would be able to pick the players he wanted, which no previous Real Madrid coach under Florentino Perez has been able to do. And so to create that meritocracy, to make them younger, to be able to see that depth and, you know, look at players like Asensio, like, say, Marcos Llorente, if he stays, he may not, he may go out on loan, they may sell him with a buyback. For example, exactly, you can see future generation building there, and, you know, that's what makes it, it's so interesting where they're going to go next.
And they're breaking records, Luke. I mean, Sergio Ramos picked up his 18th sending off in his La Liga career, equaled the record, and he will break that record.
I was watching that game thinking, what's this game missing? What's it missing?
The Real Madrid are 3-0 up. It's in the dying
minute. Final minute, I think it was, yeah. We watched Real Madrid last season in the Bernabeu. It looks like, someone made the comment, I forget who it was, but it looks like it's highly choreographed, like art, like theatre. Everyone knows what they're doing. Everyone knows the play. Zidane, I don't know if this is a particularly, you know, worthy sort of comparison, but in terms of demeanour, and as far as I know about terms, in terms of sort of how he manages his team, he sort of reminds me a bit of Ancelotti, sort of a quiet man, sort of quiet leader. He's not really bombastic like a Conte in press conferences and stuff like that. He just seems to trust his players. And to pick up on what you said, Andy, about him not perhaps getting as much interference from the chairman or the president as other managers will get. That's because he's a Zidane, though, right? I mean, that's what you get with the package. I mean, he's such a legend there. That's almost like an insulation, like a force field around him, which is really important to Real Madrid, isn't it?
But it's like any other football coach's job. It's about fate and it's about timing as well. And that's something that we don't often want to put in the story, is it? I think you look at, go back to the quarterfinals in 2016, and if they'd have lost to Wolfsburg, and, you know, they lost the first leg 2-0, I mean, he was gone.
Right.
You know, there's no doubt
about it. Fine margins, yeah.
So the cards have fallen for him. But he's always been aware of that. You know, when they lost their first home league game under him at the Bernabeu against Atletico Madrid, and he said, well, you know, a lot of the players might not be here next season. I might not be here next season. He's totally aware that it could finish at any moment. He's totally aware that if they'd have lost the final in Cardiff, well, they might have got rid of him then.
Isn't that the story of any manager at the top level, though? I mean, the margins are particularly fine, aren't they?
That they are, but more so at Real Madrid. And I think the fact that he has a complete awareness of what the club's about and how incredibly cutthroat it is, I think enables him to operate better and to have a clearer head as well.
It's an amazing story because, I mean, he was seen to be put in place as a yes man, a patsy for the president, and was kind of emblematic of this culture that big names, Galacticos, are what Florentino Perez is all about. And he finally wanted a kind of Galactico on the bench. Whether he merited it or not, it didn't. Yeah, people had, I think, reasonable doubts about that because, 10 years ago, he kind of came out and said he didn't really know what he wanted to be. He didn't want to be a coach, and it's something that generally kind of evolved within him. He served a long kind of apprenticeship within the management there. But I just find it incredible that Real Madrid, even throughout that time when they were going against Pep Guardiola's Barcelona, for example, they've managed to sustain that kind of level of competition over such a long time, rebuild, retool, and they do look now like they are not only going to be sort of in contention to win a third straight Champions League title, but they might do what Real Madrid did in the 50s, given that rejuvenation that we've seen.
Is that what they're targeting? Do you think they're targeting that five in a row?
I think it's not something you can necessarily plan for and aim for, but I think given how well everything's fallen for them, and obviously some of that has come from how good their recruitment has been, beating players beating Barcelona to players within the Spanish market. Yeah, I mean, if they were to have got someone like Saúl, I mean, he's the only kind of super talent, him and Thiago, who they haven't got, really, of this kind of next generation. Yeah, it's frightening. You can see this going on for a long time just because of the sheer gulf in class. I mean, Real Madrid don't seem to have to... They seem to have so many gears that they can go through that they can coast through the Champions League kind of knockout stages until the semi-final, and then just go up to a level where you just think...
But people are only just now starting to absorb what they are, aren't they? I mean, it's like Marcus was saying. I think perceptions of Real Madrid in the wider public are changing all the time. That sense that they can grow. And, you know, when you mentioned Dani Ceballos before, pardon me, when he joined...
I thought that was your, like, Spanish accent.
Yeah. Andalusian. Going native. But when he joined this summer... You found a lot of people immediately said, well, what's he gone there for? He's not going to play. Well, he will play. He will play under Zidane. If you're good enough, you'll get in the team.
You've heard it here first.
That's incredible.
One of the sides that will be standing in their way for that third Champions League trophy will be Bayern Munich. Carlo Ancelotti's Bayern Munich. And off the back of the Neymar chat, and we talk about Galacticos and the big spending, and don't worry, I'm well aware Bayern have spent a few quid over the years. they've just spent £65 million on a youth academy, FC Bayern Campus. Quite obviously called, and they've said it's a good answer to Neymar's world record transfer to PSG. Now, you get a bit of this from the Bundesliga, don't you? And understandably so, where everyone's spending a lot of money. And as I say, there is a few quid spent in the Bundesliga. They tend to look at the more youth players and that kind of thing. And there is a kind of slightly pious tone to their chat, Luke.
There is, and I think you can see why they felt like the academy needed a shot in the arm, because I've got a few names here. I don't know if you guys have heard of any of them.
Go on.
David Alaba, Mats Hummels, Toni Kroos, Bastian Schweinsteiger, Thomas Müller and Philipp Lahm.
Schweinsteiger's in MLS, I believe.
It's run dry, hasn't it?
Yeah, they need to... Yeah. He went off a cliff.
Yeah.
they really need to step it up, I think, yeah. I mean, the level... I mean, I find the Bayern Munich conversation interesting because of the players they already produce. I know you could argue maybe they could bring a few more through more recently. But Bayern Munich, Andy, I mean, they won the league by 15 points last season. I mean,
actually being that good.
Well, I was going to say, and not only that, looking at the stats week by week, they spent a grand total of 3 weeks off the top of the table when they were second for 3 weeks. I know, right? Yeah. So heads should have rolled there. Mm. They didn't. I understand they only made the quarterfinal of the Champions League, but what represents these days... sort of success for Bayern Munich? Is it simply under Ancelotti he needs to deliver them a Champions League?
Yeah, he does, because that's what he was specifically brought there for. Guardiola, the kind of misunderstanding of his spell in Munich, and it will always be, I think, a misunderstanding. A lot of people, I think, globally look at it as a failure because he arrived inheriting treble winners and he never won the Champions League. He never got in the final. Mm. Whereas, of course, that definitely... makes a difference to how his era is seen there. But on the other hand, I think if you ask people who go to Bayern all the time what the football was like, it was on a different level. Mm. And he was brought there to create a Bayern brand of football, for want of a better phrase. Well, in fact, that is the exact phrase that Karl-Heinz Rummenigge used, I think, when he said why he was brought in. You know, it was part of a three-part plan, starting with Van Gaal all that time ago, going to Jupp Heynckes, and then going on to Guardiola. But I think the academy thing's interesting, especially when you look at the loss of Schweinsteiger. And I know you can, on a sporting level, there's no argument against him being sold by Guardiola, of course. Mm. I think everything that's happened since has proved that. But he's missed.
Oh, he's a great servant to the club.
But it's more about him having Bayern DNA. It actually hurt when he left. And it's the same with Philipp Lahm. You know, they wanted him to stay. They couldn't find...
Yeah, what was the story behind that? Why did he make the decision to no longer be a part of...
Well, he got offered... I think he needs a little break for a start because he's not had one. But he got offered the role of sporting director.
That's
of
right.
course, that had been empty since Matteo Sammer moved on because of ill health. But he didn't feel that he'd have the right level of responsibility, I think, for this moment as well. But that idea, I think, of having people who really understand the fabric of the club is important. I think that links through to producing players from your academy, not just top-class players, but players who get the club. And Bayern are big on that. They're really big on that. I think if you look at the institution all the way up, it's important to
them. The fans also respond to that. Look at the way Spurs fans are with Harry Kane. And even, perhaps a better example, going back to Schweinsteiger, was when Danny Welbeck was sold by Manchester United. The fans were like, well, he's one of our own kind of thing.
Every group of fans will give a lot more patience, a lot more love to a player come through the academy. That's all over. That, as far as I know it, that's all over, not only Europe,
but with Bayern, these guys run the club.
Yeah, okay.
That's the difference.
That is the difference. And Ancelotti, you know, according to him, he's got a good track record of bringing players through the youth academy. At Real Madrid, according to himself, he brought through Hesse, Morata, Nacho, Casemiro and Danny Carvajal when he returned to the club.
He didn't bring through Casemiro, did he? Casemiro was signed from Sao Paulo.
Porto.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sao Paulo, wasn't it? The age of about 21.
Yeah, he was loaned to Porto. He did very well and they'd structured the deal so fantastically that even though he was their player, they had to pay €7.5 million to buy him back. I mean, it's probably the best €7.5 million they've ever spent. Yeah,
right? James, is Ancelotti, is he using a bit of creative license there?
Well, Ancelotti also said that he bloodied lowly youngsters at Milan, and he pointed to fielding the youngest ever Milan side. But the caveat to that was Milan were about to play in a Champions League final, so he just played the kids.
Okay, right.
So it doesn't really stack up when you put scrutiny into it. But I think that's another thing with Real Madrid. They send all their best kind of academy players on loan with buyback or with buyback clauses. So with Morata, Danny Carvajal, Vallejo this summer. But to bring this back to Bayern, you were talking about their pious tone. There is rationality to what they're saying.
Of course,
saying
it's understandable.
Well. Because Uli Hoeneß, for example, now that he's out of prison.
There's your pious tone.
Yeah. has been saying, you know, a club like Bayern Munich would never pay what PSG have paid Barcelona for Neymar. And I think it was either him or Karl-Heinz Rummenigge again was saying that the Allianz Arena cost what Neymar cost PSG. That's kind of this. We invest in infrastructure, we invest in people.
I will not take stuff from Uli Hoeneß about facts and figures. Thank you very much. Ignorance is not an excuse.
Can the Allianz Arena take apart that Toulouse defence?
No,
is what I'm going to say.
Won't have much pace.
Coming up after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about Serie A, and Mario Balotelli might even get a mention.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to On the Continent, everybody. We said we'd talk about Milan. We're going to do it right now. James, it's been a busy old time for the city in general, but more specifically, the AC part of that city.
It is. It's probably the biggest summer that they've had since Berlusconi bought the club in 86. I don't think we've seen a summer quite like this. Transformational summer for a club since Roman Abramovich bought Chelsea. They spent €250 million. Well, that's the amount they've committed. They're not paying that all now because they've loaned some players and they'll pay the rest of those fees in 1 or 2 years' time. But this is a club that has completely been overhauled.
Do you feel it's gone under the radar slightly in this country? Because as you say, this is such a huge summer for Milan. I mean, whether it works out or not, we shall find out. They got off to a good start, though. But it's been a blockbuster summer for them, especially in the context, you know, Berlusconi sold the club, of course. But this is a club who have won major trophy in the last 10 years, something like that. You know, they have disappointed. And this is one of the sides that I'm sure people of a similar age to us, you know, 30s, we're on a 30s, know as one of the big heavyweights of Europe. Football.
The definition of a lovely old job as well
is Silvio Berlusconi.
They brought in Gianluigi Donnarumma's older brother, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, surely, I mean, look, you're the expert here, James, but surely that is not on merit.
No, of course it's not. Although they did try and sell it as that.
I bet they did, yeah.
Even before these contract negotiations were taking place.
He's been wanted away for it here and there. His agent has been making manoeuvres and all that sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Is that related to it?
His agent is Mina Ryler, yeah. Who, if you want to stay at one club and become a one-club man, he is not the agent to go to.
No.
You know, he makes his money from moving the likes of Zlatan, Mario Balotelli, all over the place. Paul Pogba.
He's essentially like a property developer, but it's a football player developer.
He is.
Just move him on, sell up. There we go.
And one thing's for sure, he's not spending his money on clothes either, is it? He's definitely not spending his money on clothes.
Yeah, no. Or he'll have you believe that, you know, he's bought Al Capone's former mansion in Miami, which is one of the stories, I think, last summer. Look, Milan have a habit of doing this. When they signed Kaká, for example, they signed his brother, Digao, even though Digao was not fit to kind of lace up his brother's boots.
Mm. Eden Hazard and Torgan Hazard, is that an example as well?
Torgan Hazard actually is on merit a very good player.
Yeah, they kept buyback on him to go back to the Real Madrid thing, didn't they?
And what about Jordan Lukaku while we're on the subject?
Well, Jordan's just won a trophy in the Italian Super Cup. He actually set up
one of the goals.
Winner.
Yeah.
All right. Gary and Phil Neville, carry on, James.
No, but I think if you look at the players that they've signed, it is a completely new team, aside from the goalkeeper, who in himself was a bit of a signing because it did look like Ryler was going to get him out of the club. They've got a completely new defence, completely new midfield, and a completely new attack. And in that sense, it's quite exciting because... it's going to be completely different from last year. And also, the way they've gone about assembling this team, it's all been quite targeted. You know, you can see what their ideas are. They've got clear
They're
ideas.
They're young, aren't they?
Very young. And I think, the irony really this summer has been that they've spent all this money and yet another young player has come through the academy and has stolen the headlines.
Patrick Cotrone,
who's only 19 years of age. And Milan's academy has started producing players. We saw Donnarumma 2 years ago, Locatelli last year, now Cotrone. And this, I think, again, is to go back to the Bayern point. This is a kind of recognition from some of Europe's traditional elite that they can't spend like the oligarchs. They can't spend like the sheikhs. They have to produce their own players. And that was at a time when Berlusconi was trying and failing to sell the club. The only transfers that Milan were bringing in were loans and free transfers and paying rubbish players far too much in terms of wages. And instead, they tried to refocus and prioritise their academy. And all of a sudden, the academy that once produced players like Maldini, Baresi, Costacurta, Albertini is producing maybe not players of that standard again, but players who are very good and can give a future to this first team.
So that's why it's good, isn't it, that Montella has stayed? That there's that sense of continuity. Mm-hmm. That he really only wanted extra players to take the pressure off Locatelli, for example, so he didn't have to play all the games last season. I think that's what's worked quite nicely with what they've done up front, because Andre Silva has arrived, who I think will do very, very well.
I was going to ask about him, because you know that's the type of player, going on what James just said there about they can't keep up with the sheikhs, the PSGs and Real Madrids, you know. So the next type of forward they want is someone like an André Silva, surely. I mean, this is the guy, Cristiano Ronaldo, even, you know, praised him very much for the national side.
He could turn into a great. I mean, there's nothing to endear you to Cristiano like setting up a load of goals for him. And that's exactly what André Silva has done. He's taken the Karim Benzema route, you could say. Mm-hmm. But what I like is that they didn't stop at André Silva, though he is quite a high-profile, high-money signing to a point, mm-hmm. That they correctly recognise that, or at least I think they correctly recognised, maybe they were just lucky, that he was flogged by Porto last season. And he played like two first-team games for Porto before last season. He played all the games. Yeah. And people wondered why he had a sort of two-thirds of the season dip. I mean, he ended up playing, what, 50, 55 games, which is ridiculous. Mm. And I don't think it aids his development to go and do that again. But what I like is the fact that they've brought in Kalinic, who is a very good striker.
A Blackburn legend.
Exactly. Like Anthony Modeste, you know, you can't knock it.
They produce some forwards over the years.
Exactly.
Seven league goals for Blackburn. Listen, stands you in good stead.
Mm. Yeah, I think Anthony Modeste can only dream of that, to be fair, can't he? But what I like is he's someone who can, he can play with Silva, he can play instead of Silva, but there's not a demand to play him instead of Silva. He's not such a big name that you have to play him instead of Silva. So I think there's like quite a happy medium there. And it's interesting, something that Walter Zenger said after they signed Bonucci, which obviously was a game changer and certainly changed people's perception of the project. He said, well, if they go and buy a mega striker from here, if they buy an Aubameyang, people will expect them to win the league.
Yeah.
And that's too much pressure. Whereas with Kalinic, that's not really the case, is it?
Yeah, definitely not. Definitely not the case.
James, how good is Cutrone? Because I saw an article you wrote this week about comparing him to a striker back in the late 80s whose name escapes me, who scored an amazing goal for Milan against Juventus. And if you watch that goal, it's about 50 passes. The players Milan have is it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Every time the ball moves to another player, you go, oh, God. Like, how good can Cutrone be? I know he's been sort of highly rated for a wee while, hasn't he, around the club?
Yeah, I mean, Cutrone has been on their books since he was seven. Again, this is part of the refocusing that Milan did in their recruitment. They basically got a guy who just goes out looking for the best players under 14 and making sure Milan snap them all up. But Cutrone has pedigree, at least in youth football. He scored in derbies against Inter, but yeah, he also scored in big games for his country under 15 level. Scored a hat trick against Germany, and also there was a tournament in Italy. Barcelona got to the final. Milan got to the final. Milan ended up losing 3-2, but Cutrone scored both goals.
Right.
So he's someone who has been certainly catching the eye. I remember a few years ago, a lot of fans were very curious about this kid called Hashim Mastour.
I remember the videos of him, yeah. Do you remember that?
These incredible tricks. He was essentially a performing seal.
How old is he now?
He's the same age as Cutrone.
Right, okay, that's fascinating.
He was in the same youth team as him.
That video went absolutely all over the internet.
Yeah, so there was a lot of hype, and I think now he plays in Holland, I think. I think he was at Pex Zwolle.
It's a new Sonny Pike. remember him.
The new Curlon.
Yeah, right.
And instead, it's Cutrone who's gone on and managed to establish himself at a time when you think it'd be actually really difficult to establish yourself. You know, you've got a club spending 250 million euro in the transfer market. They're linked every week with Belotti, Aubameyang, Diego Costa. They've signed André Silva. They've got Nikola Kalinic. You think it's going to be difficult for him to actually win himself a place in that team. And instead, he's the big winner of the pre-season at Milan because he's actually persuaded the club to not sell him, not send him out on loan, to Crotone. See, it's a bit of a tongue twister.
That's who he scored against the weekend. They wanted him on loan, right?
Yeah, they did. Okay. He was man of the match at the weekend.
They were down to 10 men for most of the game.
But that was because of a foul on him. He won the penalty.
Yeah.
But he also set up a goal, scored a goal. Italy have a very promising generation of players coming through. And I think one of the things that, when you look at Milan in the title race, I think one of the reasons people believe that they have a chance is because you look at that defence now. Donnarumma is probably going to replace Gianluigi Buffon after the World Cup next summer, maybe even before that, although I think that's probably unlikely given he's captain, such a big leader for that team. But you look at that Milan defence, Romagnoli, Bonucci, Andrea Conti, those players are also the future of the national team, more so than, say, Chiellini, Barzagli. So there's almost a bit of a changing of the guard here into who has the best defence in Italy. Now, until proven otherwise, Juventus still do. They hold that title. Mm. But Milan's looks very good.
But a quick word on their rivals, Inter, because there's some exciting times happening there. We've spoken, obviously, a bit about Milan and their blockbuster summer. But Inter, they beat Fiorentina in front of over 51,000, which doesn't sound much for the San Siro. Of course, it holds a lot more than that. But it is significant because it's the most they've had there for an August home match since 2009-2010, the treble-winning year. What's going on at Inter that people are suddenly turning heads and thinking, well, these guys might be worth a watch?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's the transfer window that they've had because it's been quite low profile for Inter. Inter were bought by a Chinese e-commerce giant last year, Suning. And they, right away, put their money where their mouth is and spent a lot of money, €150 million last summer, €28 million in January. And everyone was expecting, I think even the manager was expecting them to go big this summer and sign an Alexis Sanchez or Arturo Vidal. They were being linked with players of that calibre. And instead, all they've done really is recognise that they already have a very talented bunch of players within the team. Players who are the envy of some of Europe's other big clubs, like, for example, even Perisic. We've had this saga of Perisic, is he or isn't he going to Manchester United all summer? Mauro Icardi, all of these super talented players. That team just needed completing, and I think that's what they've done this summer. They've signed players who are not particularly big names. West Brom legend Borja Valero, for example. But Borja Valero has a very high reputation in Italy, just because he's
great for Fiorentina.
He's a super smart player. He knits everything together. He makes the players around him play well. He's a wonderful player to watch, a coach on the pitch, if you like. And they've finally addressed the problems they had at fullback. They've got a really good centre back, Milan Skriniar, who did well at Sampdoria last year, can play with both feet, passes the ball wonderfully well. So that team looks good. But as we said, recruitment campaign, not as spectacular as Milan's, but they say the best signing is the manager, Luciano Spalletti, which is just because of how he's as close as you can come, really, in Italy to guaranteeing your team to be in contention in the title race.
Perisic, how important is it that they keep him? And fans of the Premier League who listened to the other show we did would have heard the link of him to Man United, which has basically been going on all summer, hasn't it? He played off the left at the weekend, looked brilliant, he looked really good. I mean, the whole team looked good, to be fair. But what's the latest on that? Is there talk of him still moving?
I think that's dead. I think Spalletti's persuaded him to stay and the club to keep him, even though getting something like between 45 and 50 million is, I think, a really good price.
How good do you actually think he is?
It's hard to say.
Will he instantly improve Man United, for example?
For that side, yes. Just because he's a more natural wide player than I think Anthony Martial is. I think Perisic has played a variety of positions throughout his career. He played as a striker at Bruges, I think, and scored more than 20 goals that year. I think what Perisic is very good at is, for Inter, for example, he's the only player that seems compatible with Mario Icardi. They both feed off each other really well. And he could maybe have done... If Croatia had an Olympic athletics team, he'd probably be in that. Because he's got incredible stamina, incredible running ability, which allows him to get up and down without losing lucidity in front of goal. And he can track back. So he's a very good wide player.
At elite level, he's a really late developer.
I think that.
It's interesting, I think, when you look at Paulinho, who's been the punchline, unwarranted, in my view.
Well, did you see his keepy uppies?
I can do more than that.
Yeah, I've seen you play. That's not true.
Yeah.
That is not true.
You could do the same as that.
At least with Teo Hernandez, you can say he was a defender. Yeah. I mean, that was the worst keepy uppies effort of the summer, wasn't it? But I think if you look at Perisic, He wasn't great at Dortmund. Of course, he scored against Arsenal in the Champions League, but did absolutely nothing else. He wasn't great at Wolfsburg either. And it looked like Inter had really overpaid for him when he arrived from Wolfsburg. And then he's become more and more important for Croatia, and he was absolutely terrific for Inter last season.
So. And he'll be 29 this season, Perisic, as well. So
yeah. He's same age as Paulinho.
There we go.
There we are. We move on to the chat to a former Inter player himself, Mario Balotelli, up to his old tricks.
This was absolutely fantastic.
This is for Nice in the qualifying for the Champions League. Andy,
so should I give people a bit of context to this?
Well, okay, yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Can I just say, as a I have sympathy with Lucien Favre, his coach.
Look, give us a bit of context.
So the context is, for those who haven't seen it, Nice were knocked out of the Champions League playoff last night by Napoli, 4-0 aggregate. They were beaten at home 2-0 after losing the first leg 2-0. One of the goals that Napoli scored...
The first one?
The first goal was just after half-time, and it occurred when Nice only had 10 men on the pitch because Mario Balotelli was caught... And by the way, it was about 2 minutes after the kickoff for the second half. Balotelli was caught in a bit of an altercation with the fourth official over the jewellery he was wearing. It's almost like if you could think of a stereotypical thing for Balotelli to get in trouble for, this would be it, and then you would write it off as being, no, that's just too far. Yeah. That's beyond parody.
He had it covered, didn't he?
Yeah.
He had it covered, but apparently not sufficiently.
Is that Balotelli's fault, or is that the fourth official being a massive jobs worth?
Well, I think you can make the argument either way. I mean, it's kind of like when you go to school when you're 14 and, you know, the sticking plaster that's covering your pierced ear starts peeling off. It was a little bit like that, wasn't
we know
it?
What side of the fence Lucien Favre's on, by the way.
Well, certainly. I mean, he's rather earnestly, since the start of last season, taken on Balotelli as a project. And what other way can you take him on, I suppose? I mean, much like Atem Ben Arfa, he arrived at Nice as someone who was on his... Like after last chance, perhaps. And, you know, he's done well there, although he has driven Favre, who's quite a calm man, to distraction on a number of occasions. And, last night on French television after the game, Favre really let loose. He said, well, you know, first it was his boot, and then it was his wristband. And he says, there comes a time when you have to call a cat a cat.
Yeah.
And he said he wasn't invested enough in the game. He didn't do enough running.
That's what you're going to get when you sign Balotelli.
Exactly. Yeah.
But do you think these managers, you've got managers, you know, he played under Mancini at Man City, of course, played under Rodgers at Liverpool. And these managers, and Favre now, I guess, the thing that I see that these managers have got in common is managers have this ego, and it's to a large extent got them where they are now. They think, I'm the manager to be able to sort this player out. And to be fair...
Rather than change his actual nature.
Yeah, quite.
As James was saying, that's ridiculous.
But to be fair to Balotelli, last season, his best league goal return of his career.
Yeah, and he was... excellent in patches. He had a little dip in the middle of the season, probably because he's never worked so hard in his life.
Scored as many goals as Mbappe last season.
Yeah, and Favre worked well with him, actually. But I think what worked so well for Balotelli last season is the fact that Nice had a very young, athletic side who did all the running for him. So players like William Cyprien, who got injured... two-thirds of the way through the season, serious knee injury. Jean-Michel Seri, who of course has been linked with Liverpool, Barcelona, Arsenal throughout this summer. Roma, of course, who's very close to going there. And Younes Belhanda, who's since moved on to Galatasaray. Now, if you take that forward to the second leg of the Champions League playoff against Napoli, Napoli are a much better side than
Much
Nice.
Better, yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, I think the Champions League would have been a poorer place without them.
Yeah.
And I think ever since the draw was made, you couldn't have thought of a worse draw for Nice. Secondly, the side's only just coming together after people like Belhanda have left in the summer. And I think that's made a difference. You've got the top scorer from last season, because it wasn't Balotelli, Alassane Player, coming back from a big injury. And I was there
good
at the
player.
Week. Yeah, very good. And he came back, Balotelli, to play his first minutes of the weekend, 25 minutes as substitute of the weekend. Snyder, who's been preparing, who's, again, a really interesting signing for them, in the role of Danche, I suppose, a player who you feel had kind of drifted from the spotlight, no doubt about his quality, but they want to refocus him there. They proved they can do it with Danche. They proved in a different way they could do it with Balotelli and Ben Arfa, of course, very different cases. But, you know, I saw Snyder play at the weekend and, you know, it was hot, even on Saturday night. And after having no pre-season and just, you know, working with a fitness coach in the Netherlands, it must have been tough. But to pitch in Snyder and Balotelli after that and say, all right, go and beat Napoli for us.
Yeah.
Go and pull back.
That's a fair point,
A 2-0 lead from the first
league. It's
absolutely ridiculous.
It's harder for him when he's not actually on the pitch, though, isn't it? Balotelli. I mean, the start of it, page one, is you need to be on the pitch.
Yeah, that is,
and that's
that
what's
is
annoyed
true.
Favre, isn't it?
That is true. But I wonder if it's, you know, is history and reputation to a certain degree. Obviously, the fact that he's had to put up with him for a year and a bit is probably part
it's taken
of
its toll.
Well,
with Snyder, he said, "Oh well, it came too soon for Snyder." But right. Balotelli drives me nuts. When yeah. And it's said, like Homer talking about Bart.
When all said and done, Nice won't be in the Champions League and Napoli will. And no, obviously exactly. The draw is this week.
And the other teams that go into the draw for Friday based on last night's results are Celtic, Olympiacos, Maribor and Sevilla. They all join Napoli.
Yeah, we are, you see. Right then, now it's time for a bit of correspondence.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a show without a bit of correspondence from our listeners. I've gone with the hashtag, I don't know how you guys feel about this, for the rest of the season I've gone with a hashtag bother Brussels or harass Horncastle.
Not away from the pod, please.
We could bring in at some point. I'm not ruling out bringing in Seduce Speller later on in the season as well.
It's the last thing
for
we
anyone
want.
Else. It's the last thing you want. So I asked our listeners to get in touch with any questions they want answered from you guys. So I guess I'll go with Andy first. Hashtag bother Brassel. This is from Jacob Nixon. He says, who look most likely to be the surprise package in the Bundesliga this season? Do you fancy Stuttgart to pull a Leipzig?
I do not fancy Stuttgart, but I do fancy Schalke, actually.
Okay.
A very good start to the season for them. And he's very wary of saying it's the Nagelsmann route, but they have gone the Nagelsmann route with Domenico Tedesco.
Whose name translates as Dominic German.
There you go. And he changed it by default.
You can't get any better than that in Schalke's right. situation, can you?
That's why they hired him. But is he actually a coach?
31 years old.
Okay.
And, he's only got half a season of head coach experience right. in the second division. Not even, but 11 games, I think it was last season. And, you know, they started the season really well. And he's managed to get the best out of existing players who were just going sideways. Yeah, cool. Conor Pilianca has started the season really well. So maybe it could be them to have a go. Huge amount of pressure there, though. It won't let up.
There you go, Jacob. That answers your question. Harass Horncastle next. Liam Taylor, is Mauro Icardi the best striker in Italy? Now, just to add a bit more on that, when we saw that Morata was available, and a few Premier League clubs, of course, United went in for Lukaku and Chelsea got Morata, were looking for strikers. I was a bit sort of confused as to why Mauro Icardi's name wasn't popping up, because he played excellent at the weekend. I mean, a great example of how good he is, I suppose, would be he's not the tallest of strikers. I mean, he can't be 6 foot, and he scored a great header at the weekend.
It's a brilliant header
of
the ball.
He's so busy. He's almost like the full package, and he's captain of Inter this season as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
So was there any particular reason? Well, one, is he the best striker in this league, which is Liam's question, and two, was there any particular reason that a Premier League club or two wasn't linked with him?
I think pound for pound, Higuain is the best striker in Italy.
Okay.
It's a very strong division for strikers. You think of the number who got
Fabio Barini.
North of 20 goals. Mm. Fabio Barini.
Yeah. Well, we've got time for one more after this, and he's in that one, so keep your powder dry on that.
But Belotti Mertens is not an orthodox striker, but fantastic player.
He was
fantastic
good against
goal scorer.
Yeah, yeah.
But Icardi is, he's like a shark. Yeah, there's a drop of blood in the ocean, he'll find it.
Yeah.
And he's one of the great penalty box strikers. I think he's added to his game in the last 2 years, particularly with that relationship with Perisic. I think there was a time last year when he was getting more assists than any other striker in Europe's top five leagues.
Right.
But to go to the other question about why there wasn't any interest in him this summer, I think there is interest. It's just that he is very committed to Inter. And it's actually quite it's quite refreshing to hear someone actually buy into a club so as well as Icardi has with Inter, particularly considering, you know, the differences of opinion he's had with their fans. Remember last year he released his biography. There was a passage in it in which he essentially was asking the ultras for a fight, which didn't go down well. But he loves that club. He loves that city. His wife and his kids are very much settled there. And he wants to make into the force they were again.
Right.
And
there's just been no interest on his part to move across, I
no.
suppose. All right, final one. We've got time for just one more quick one, I think. Harass Horncastle, just how far can Milan expect to go this season with two-thirds of Liverpool's old Europa League front three? Which I guess he means Suso and Barini.
Right,
yeah, they just need Brendan.
Suso's a hugely improved player, though, by the way. Linked with Spurs over the summer.
Yeah, massively. He's become indispensable. I think Wolfsburg actually wanted to sign him as well in the summer, and they said absolutely not. He's one of our key players, which will come as a surprise. But he's 23, and perhaps hadn't started fulfilling his potential by the time he left Liverpool. But I think Milan can genuinely contend for the title this year, and I think that's one of the really interesting things. There is a feeling in Italy that this year it will be a kind of five-way fight. It could be a five-way fight for the title. I know the bookies think Juventus are far and away the favourites, but you look at Napoli, how settled they are. You look at the money that Milan have put into that team. You look at the manager that Inter have appointed, and you know, Roma over the last decade always go close. So yeah, I think they'll be fighting for the title.
And we end the show where we started, because Ligue 1's pretty much exactly like that, isn't it?
Okay, there you go.
And Germany, yeah.
Well, next week we'll have the Champions League draw to talk about, of course, which takes place this Friday, and lots of other things besides. But thanks, chaps.
That's the end of the show, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to On the Continent. Luke, where can people find us?
Yeah, search for On the Continent at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information, check out thefootballramble.com/news. And if you want to get in touch with us, just use it on Twitter at OTCpod or email us at europe@thefootballramble.com.
Every Wednesday. So we shall be back next week. We'll see you then.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.